The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of Harris Stowe State University or the Black Radio Hall of Fame.
Africans at home and throughout the diaspora, unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now it's time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now it's time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Now, right now.
Now it's time to do the right
now.
Thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now.
That's right. That's right. We are going to get it right because we have to get it right. There is so much chaos going on in the world, but they are caring, loving people who have a commitment to world peace, to advancing humanity, and to developing our young people. And so we have a show that's dedicated to lifting up the voices of young people, and we're going to get to them in a minute. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we are up on the second anniversary of the school shooting at Central Vision and Performing Arts. And we haven't heard a whole lot about what has happened internally. And so my concern, and also part of a fear, is that, you know, people have gone back in business as usual. But the thing that I keep pointing out is this was the St. Louis Public Schools' first school shooting. And the expectation should have been, we need to have a not just a district-wide, but a community-wide discussion about what happened and what we need to do for our students who were traumatized, not just in that building, but across the district. And that just didn't happen. And not only was it St. Louis Public Schools' first shooting, it actually was the first shooting in an urban setting by a Black shooter. So there was and rightfully so, there was some spotlight on the city and the school district to see how we would respond. And I don't think we responded. We didn't step up to the occasion. And that's my personal view. And I know it's the views of some of other folks throughout the community. But today we're going to hear voices of young people who not only went to that school, but also were in the district schools and other districts, and we want to hear how that played out on that day. And I've given them permission to say if it gets too emotional, they don't want to talk about it, that's fine. So I'm going to start with you, Maisha, because you were one of the first people that we brought on the other show, right, almost like a couple of weeks afterwards, and it was pretty raw. And I remember you were, you know, sometimes very teary throughout that interview. People need to know that, one, the video footage that the community has been asking for, the news people have been asking for, that was just released a couple of months ago. So almost 2 years it took for the police department to release that footage. Why is that important? Because in other school shootings, that footage is released within 6 to 12 hours. That's important because folks need to know what happened so that they can make adjustments. Like if something happened with a particular door or the way that security and police responded, that's a chance to say, okay, look what we did there. We need to change that up. It's a learning opportunity. And it's almost like the police department was trying to hide. So when they finally released it, most people believed it was edited. Like it didn't contain, it was like about 12 minutes worth of footage that came from both inside the school and from around the school. But why did it have to take so long? So that's the thing that just troubles me. It's like, we should have been like responded very quickly to what happened so that we know how not to repeat it again. So you were there in the eye of the storm, my Asia. What did you see that you thought could have been done differently at Central Vision and Performing Arts?
Well, for starters, I feel like we could just be more protected and going through drills more frequently, because the way that we did it, it was like we did it once or twice a year. Although these things have happened before, just not in the St. Louis area. but I feel as though since that is the case and that it has happened before, that they should have took more, how do I word this? They should have took more responsibility into schools and trying to figure out how to keep these students safe. I say that because, like, at the school that I go to now, it's a very old building, and the classrooms are very open. A lot of the classrooms that we sit in every day, 8 hours a day, there's not many places to hide or, like, to protect yourself or to take cover. Even if we had a tornado storm, we just have desks which are connected by a table in a seat, which will not protect us no matter how much anyone tries to beat around that. So I just feel like whenever we reach out about things, that it should be more attention brought to it and not just overlooking it as, oh, it's just a student, or you're underage, so your feelings are just for the moment.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, I want to remind people that there were 3 people killed that day and 7 people injured. And one of them was a beloved teacher at the school. That was Jean Kuska, who you knew, Maisha, and also a 15-year-old Alexandra Bell. And so the shooter, 19-year-old Orlando Harris, was a graduate of the school. And so so part of this to me means that we didn't do what we needed to do with that young man, because from what I was told and learned, he had some troubling past. And so folks were aware of that, but didn't seem to be proactive. I want to move to some of the other students who were at other schools. Particularly you, Jafia. We have Jafia Mosley here, and she was at the school that's joined to them, and that's the, let me get it right, because I know I always use the initials and then I forget what it means, but it's the Medical Bioscience. Did I get that right?
Collegiate School of Medicine and Bioscience.
Okay. So when you all were hearing all of the hoopla and sirens, what were you told? What was happening?
Honestly, we weren't told anything. I just know that we went from sitting in class, learning a lesson, to lock the doors. But it was no, like, information. It was just panic. And that's something that I feel like was biased. Because it wasn't announced right away on the intercom. I just know that my principal himself was going to door-to-door saying lock the doors, but it was no information. So that scared us. That had us in our head. And then, boom, on the intercom, it's an intruder in the building. Mind you, we don't really have, well, then we didn't really have any intruder drills. So me personally and a lot of my classmates, we didn't know it was real. So It was kind of mixed emotions. I'm not going to say we didn't take it seriously. It was a shock. It was just a shock.
And yeah, it was more surreal because it never happened before.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. And we were just in the class under a desk. Well, we were really just out in the open because it's no really place to actually hide in the classroom. So it was really all by faith and hope, honestly. And once we did hear we knew it was real whenever we heard the shots. And once we did hear the police and stuff, it was all bad, because once we were able to get out of our classrooms, the police, it was like they were full force on us, like putting guns in our face, telling us to get out of the building. It was just so much going on, and it was just too much for me. And like, the going to your parents, and once we got outside, it was just so many people, so many officers trying to give reports and statements. It was just all like bad on my end. Right. Overwhelmed, overstimulated and everything.
So once that happened, since you all were occupied the exact same building that the shooting happened, what happened afterwards? Was there, I know it was shut down for a little bit. When you all came back to school, were there any discussions about what happened, what services people needed? Did they need a psychologist? Did they need counseling? Did you all have those kinds of discussions in collegiate?
At collegiate, me personally, I feel like collegiate, they went about it too quickly. They had some of the resources for some of the kids, but like the diversity in my school, it's only a like good two handful of Black students. And I know a lot of the Black students can relate to what I'm about to say, that like shooting and things, it's common for us. Like we grew up around it. We've seen it. And like the way that they went about it, they didn't give us, the kids that have been through it, like a traumatic timeline, the resources that we needed. They had dogs, they had counselors, but like really touching base on what happened, no, it was just literally going back to normal. And it was a big adjustment for me, honestly. And I just felt really, really alone around that time.
And so what did you do for yourself personally, or what did your family do knowing that you had went through this?
Well, me and my dad, we took the next step. I did out of school counseling for myself. I started to do therapy. I do take medication, so I was on top of that. And like, I took care of myself outside of school, because in school, it wasn't being done. So I had to do what I had to do for myself.
Wow. Wow. What about you, Jay? Jay Porter is, you know, talking with us, and they were, I think you were at the school, right? At the time of the shooting. So yes. What did you think was happening, and how did you respond, and how do you think the school responded to the needs of the students?
Well, at that time, there were a lot of mixed reports coming in, because a lot of things were he say, she say. Not everything was given fact. And even after, there were no facts given. A lot of things were just coming from the media, and that's where our resources were. So in my classroom, I can say that we weren't particularly scared, but we were kind of concerned because it happened so close. And having friends that attend that school, and having one of my closest friends losing their friend at that school, that was really heartbreaking for me. As far as the school, I don't think that the school really talked to us about it. As far as what happened, they didn't have the information, just like we didn't have any information. So they weren't really looking out to see, you know, if anybody was okay, you know, because it didn't happen to us.
Let me interrupt you for a minute, because you're at University City.
Yeah.
And my understanding was most of the schools did shut down because they didn't have, like most of you all are saying, they didn't know if the shooter was moving to somewhere else. Were there multiple shooters? Were they coming to other schools? So did you all do a shutdown as well?
They did shut down. They had us in classes, and they just had us stay there. There weren't really any like procedures or anything they had us do. They just had us stay stagnant until they got any more information, until they can have anything to furthermore move on. I will say, as far as University City, we've had a couple of incidents with involving like firearms in the school. So we have definitely got precautions when it comes to firearms and making sure that the safety of our students. I still don't think that is enough. I do think that we need to practice more drills, because many people are feeling lost. They don't know what to do when they're in those type of situations. So,
And I'm going to come back around the guns and the threats in a minute. I do want to hear from Autumn. Autumn, what was your thing on that, the day of October 24th, 9/11 a.m. for you in that day? What do you most remember?
I was in chemistry, and I remember my teacher was going through a lesson, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, we're going on a soft lockdown. So therefore, it's like we were still able to come out of our classes and whatnot, and all you had to do was turn the lights off. And then all of a sudden, my teacher gets the email, and she's like, everybody moves to the back of the classroom. And it's just like, what's going on? And I remember my mom called me, and my teacher was like, you can't answer the phone, don't answer your phone. And I was like, okay, my mom's calling me. I'm like, I need to, like, something's wrong. And so I had to cry. My mom called, and she texted me. She's like, I heard there's a school shooter, like, something, like, what's wrong? Is it at your school? And I'm like, no, I don't think it's at my school. I'm like, we just went into a hard lockdown. I don't think it's at my school. And she's like, I'm going to try and come get you. And I'm like, they saying no one can enter and leave the building. And she's like, what? Like, and it was like, we didn't learn any information on what was going on or what school it was. We had to learn from social media, like, mm-hmm. From another student who was there. Like, how we had friends that went to the school. Mm-hmm. Like, my teacher wasn't telling us nothing. Like, I think I feel like my teacher knew that something like this, a school shooting had happened, because I feel like she got an email, and because it was urgent, because she's like, oh, move to the back of the classroom. And it was like, yeah, for like 2 hours, we were just sitting there.
Gateway became the place where parents were told to pick up their kids. So outside, there was a lot of chaos because I can tell you this, I'm just firsthand. It was a lot of chaos because there was really no procedure initially in place for us to connect parents with their students. I mean, it took a minute to get it together, but can you imagine hearing stuff on the news? And like your mom can't get to you to talk to you. And so they just started converging, as I would if I was a parent, converging on Gateway to say, where's my child? Where's my child? How do I get my child out of here? And I just want to give a visual for my listeners to know where Gateway is. Gateway High School is located in a cul-de-sac. So it's one way in and one way out. And one of the things that some of us who were there on the scene, we did some recommendations that we sent to the police department, to elected officials, and to the school board, saying, here's what we think should have happened differently. And the first thing was that folks should not have been told to go to Gateway. I mean, if there was the shooter decided to go there, then folks were really like just locked in with no place to go. So when parents came to pick up their kids, they jammed the street. Remember I said one way in, one way out, and buses, you know, couldn't get in. It was bad. It was bad. But I think we got it under control and got a system together that we could get students safely to their parents. But what we were trying to figure out during all of this is the students who actually went to Gateway, what was happening with them? Were they just stuck in a classroom in the dark all day long? So what was happening there?
Once my mom knew that they were transferring the kids to my school, that's when she was like, I don't care what they're telling me, I'm coming to get my kid. So I left around, like, I'll say 12, but I knew I had friends that were like, okay, I can't leave until it's like, I don't have no way to get home. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, yeah. Like, so I don't think the school dismissed early, like, for kids who had no way home. Like, it was like, oh, you're going to have to wait to the end of the day when the buses come.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's what we were told as well. Yeah. Nobody could leave. So, but I'm thinking what was being told to students? I mean, I know some of the students that came out said we were in the dark and we were told to put our heads on the desk. And this was some students, I'm sure not all of them, but I'm just thinking if you got to be there for like hours, your imagination had to be going wild. Like, what in the world is going on the outside? And when I leave this building, what can I expect?
Because once someone tells us, because like I said, my teacher, she didn't tell us anything. And like I said, we found a lot of the information through social media and through contacting the students from the school. And it was like, oh, they don't know how many shooters it was. And I'm like, wait, so what if the shooter happens to be amongst these kids that's being transferred to my school? And it's like, so you're bringing these kids, no offense, you're bringing these kids, you're putting us in danger now. Like, yet, like, yes, we felt bad for them, but it's like, you're now putting more people in danger. Like, you, y'all have nothing under control. And it was just like, I feel like, because even once being brought outside, and I was reunited with my mom, it was like, oh, a lot of the kids, a lot of those CVPA kids were, like, it was, they were amongst us. Like, it was just a big group of people, and it's just like, oh my gosh, what it, what, this is so chaotic. And it's like, nothing was really under control.
Right. So it felt very chaotic and felt like nothing was in control. And then what you have to do when you see that happening, you have to find a way to center yourself. And I know you talked about that, Jafia, but what went on at your school when students were allowed to come back? Were there assembly-wide discussions about, okay, this is what happened, and we want to let hear people's feelings and learn what we could have done differently? Did you all have those kind of conversations at Collegiate?
Not at all. Before we officially came back to school, I received an email basically saying that I had to come back on, like, campus to take my final or fail it.
Wow.
So I didn't want to fail it, so I went back very uncomfortably. My head was not, like, work-wise. That's not what I was thinking about at the moment. Once we officially
I want to really understand what you just said. Mm-hmm. So the for communication that you got is, after all that you all have been through, it's finals time. Come take your final, and if you don't show up, you're going to fail.
Yes, and before I got that email, it was basically just, oh, our side wasn't damaged, so, like, do y'all want to come back to the building, or should we resume school somewhere else? And to me, I just feel like they were thinking and worried about the wrong things. I know our education is important, but at that moment, it wasn't more important.
Yeah, not more important than your physical and mental health. Wow.
Yeah.
And so for you all who are connected with social media, and you got, you know, friends at different schools, both inside the district and outside the district, what were you hearing from people about what they thought happened and what was happening at their school? Jay, what about you?
A lot of what we heard came from a news site called VOTP News, which is not always the best credible source, but, you know, that was the only source that we had. I can't remember exactly what was being said, but I know there were a lot of different stories. People were saying that there were people on the roof. They were saying that there's multiple people in the school. No one knew what was actually happening except for the people that were living in it. And so for us, I just knew that I wasn't listening to any other story until I got the story for myself. At the time, I didn't know anybody. Well, I didn't reach out to anybody. I was just... and so in shock that, like, something like this could happen in our region. Like, you just never would think that something like this would happen. And I also think that is why people were so late to the response of what happened, because no one would ever think that it would happen in St. Louis, especially at a school like CVPA. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was just a lot of mixed everything. I know that a lot of people were hurt because their friends were in there or their family was in there. I know some people, teachers, like their moms and stuff, were going through that. So a lot of people were going through a lot at that time. And it was really affecting all of us.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about, this is going back to your question about threats and being ready for any kind of situation. And who mm-hmm. wants to be practicing for that? I mean, who wants to be doing a drill for an active shooter? I mean, that's just really, it's hard for me to imagine, although I know that's the world that we live in and why there's not more drills happening so that people don't just completely panic. Because really, for me, based on the number of school shootings since Columbine, it's now a regular occurrence. So the fact that the district was not having regular drills for active shooters is concerning. And also at the particular schools, and I would say high schools in particular. Now, since this school year alone, there have been multiple threats about shootings and bombings. And I want to ask you all, and some of these are like kids, like 10 years old and 12 years old. And, you know, they were in Ohio. It was a 10-year-old who told somebody that there was going to be a shooting at his school. Now, it wasn't clear that he was going to do the shooting. He was just saying it. And he was immediately whisked away. He's a little black kid. And he was charged with a felony. He's charged with, in Ohio, apparently inducing panic is a felony. And so I'm just thinking about how we are responding. We seem to be responding with more punishment as opposed to looking at why are all these kids, I think it's about not thrill seeking, but attention seeking. They're calling out for help. And the way, because adults haven't been listening, they're trying to get our attention by any means necessary. Why do you all think people would say that they're going to shoot up a school? And did you ever hear anybody say that? Because Maeja, I know you say that, you know, there's been some other kinds of threats and people bringing guns to school. But were they going to shoot up the school or was that for personal defense?
Right. So, for starters, I will say the year prior to all of these things, this event taking place, we did have multiple threats, and we did know that it was from someone in the school. We just didn't know exactly who, because they were making multiple fake pages, and it just was being ignored. Like I said, another call for help, really. And just nobody paid attention to it. They looked past it because it was just another teenager, another black teenager, calling out for help that no one just felt like it was urgent enough to reach out and say, oh, hey, how can I help? Or what's going on at home? Or like, how are you feeling? We don't really have those conversations anymore. So when that is ignored, we take it into our own hands. And a lot of times those reactions are thoughts are mainly violent because there's so much going on around us. And just to circle back to what Jafia stated, that being black students in the St. Louis area, we do experience a lot of traumatic things. And a lot of times it gets ignored and people don't like to be around us, or people just look at us as automatic threats because, one, we're black, and then the areas that we stay in. But that's not something that we can control. And I feel like if it's that much of a problem, that there should be more resources for us. Just like in the schools, whenever we return back, we had resources, but they weren't really serious about it. I feel like the people that they placed in the schools to help us out, like the counselors, they were only placed there to really to just get to know what happened or like how we felt in the situation. They weren't really there to help us. Like, I don't want to drop any names, but there was this one specific lady that would come in every day, faithfully every day, and pretend to do her job, really. Sometimes she was a big help just to have someone to talk to, but it was more like like an instigating effect. Like, she was just that instigating person. Like, if a student came in and told how they felt or like just anything, she would go and share it with the next person that came in after. That made me really uncomfortable to a point where I stopped wanting to go to school. I just wasn't comfortable at school. I began to shut myself out. I started to sit alone. Like, I would even have to call Jafia to come over to the other building during lunch with me to comfort me, because I just wasn't comfortable. I didn't feel safe in the space. It was just so much going on. So yeah, our mental health just really declined nowadays, and people just, they
look, ignore it.
Yeah. So Jafia, what, you know, have you all experienced over there at Collegiate bomb threats or, you know, gun threats, and what were people's reactions both before October 24th and since then?
I know, like, I remember this like it was yesterday. I remember coming to school, and it was like so many people not at school, and I'm like, what did I miss? Like, why am I here? And it's, they not her. And basically, they basically told me, have you seen it on social media? Somebody supposed to be coming to school to shoot the school up. And that was literally my last time hearing about it until it happened. Like, and I say that I feel as if the staff in my building knew, because anything on social media, they find it. Like, we have school sleeping pages. They shut them down. They get them gone, and whoever behind it, they get in trouble. But that specific threat, it was never talked about. It was never addressed or anything. And we haven't got any threats as of like right now after the school shooting. But I feel like with what happened and with the information that we received before it happened, my school, they should be doing more things to prevent something like this happening again. Because just because it happened at our school first don't mean that it can't happen again.
Right, right. And Jay, what's happening at your school? Any threats that you're hearing about any of your peers? And what would you do if you had a peer that said, I'm tired of this, you know, stuff. I'm going to shoot this school up. What have you all been trained to help peers when they're going through that? What's UCity doing over there?
Well, right now, UCity, we do have metal detectors. There was a situation earlier in the year where a student had a firearm in the school, and it was it wasn't to harm the entire school, but just a specific person in that school. A lot was going on at that time. We didn't know what to do. We didn't know how to react. All we knew on the intercom was our principal told us that we are on a lockdown and no one move, no one go anywhere. And we didn't know what to do. We were just stuck. And since then, we've had this metal detector, it's firearm detector situation going on, and it's gotten better. It's improving. But as far as talks about threats, we've gotten many threats. There was just a threat on October 2nd saying that they were going to come for us.
And do you know where those threats came from?
I'm not sure where the last threat came from. I'm pretty sure other people have figured it out, but I wasn't tuned into it. I try not to look at those things. I try not to get into the negativity about it. I have trust in my school because I have trust in my principal that he is going to keep us all safe if we were to ever be in that situation. I do think that adults, they do put out resources. Schools will put out resources, but they will make it up to the kids in order to go to those resources. And I think that some people are not comfortable with that. Some people don't know, don't have the relationships that other people have with those counselors or social workers. You know, some people don't feel comfortable just going up to that person or talking to them, and they don't have resources at home. So I feel like schools can do better when it comes to talking about stuff with mental health, making sure, like, checking in with their kids, making sure that they're all right. You know,
Go ahead.
There are a lot of underlying issues that I feel like schools can figure out if they just talk to them and just reach out to the kids.
Yeah. So, Autumn, when when you hear about a kid that's just so upset that they, you know, whether it's another kid that they want to harm or a teacher that's done something to them, is there any training that you all get to say, when you all hear this, here's how you respond and who, and this is who you need to go to report that before it, you know, explodes? Any training around that? Any counseling around that? Like, if you hear this, here's what you do.
No, it's just, you hear it and it's like, oh, sometimes it's like, you might think, okay, I can go tell this person, like a higher up, like, okay, this is what's going on. But it's like 9 times out of 10, they don't care. Cause it's like, oh, they're playing. You hear this all the time. It's not, it's not serious. And it's like, oh, well, this same kid keeps saying this same thing. Like, oh, he's going to.
Yeah. And to your point, Autumn, we hear that same story when these shooters actually happen. They will have, you know, made threats along the way and folks ignored them. And then one day it really happened and people say, well, they said that 3 months ago that they were going to do this, but nobody did anything. And why do you think there's such indifference about that? Is it, to Maesha's part, is it just because you all are teenagers and folks are not? But by now, like, it's been 30 years since Columbine, and literally there have been hundreds of school shootings, thousands of people injured and killed, and many more traumatized. Like, what do you think it's going to take for us to deal with this in a more serious way?
I really wouldn't know, because I feel like it has a big part to do with the fact that, oh, we're teenagers. They look at us like, okay, you're a kid, you don't know what you're talking about. They look down on how we should approach situations. It's like, even like most of us, how all of us in this call are 12th graders. Uh-huh. We're almost grown. We know, like, we're not 10, we're not young. We know what we're talking about and we know how to express our feelings. And I feel like when it comes to the, for instance, the principals or whatnot, I feel like they just don't want to deal with it. Like, it's just like, okay, we just gonna brush this under the rug. We don't want to speak on it because it's just gonna cause more paperwork, more stress on us. It's like, I feel like that's how they look at it. So therefore they choose not to do anything about it.
I think that's a sad commentary, y'all. Really, it's just sad that you all have to feel that way. But I feel the same way. I feel like folks are not listening and they're not doing the probing that they need to do, because I think you all have the answers and you're trying to tell folks the answers. One of the things that happened with Central Vision of Performing Arts is after this happened, they then said, we're going to spend $35 million on the school. And almost half of that was going to go toward technology, meaning surveillance and security and safety. But I, you know, I've been like trailing and reading about this since it happened, and I hardly hear anything about, we're going to get more school counselors in the schools. We're going to have after school programs where kids get, you know, can do some group therapy together, those kids that are feeling a certain way, those folks who've been identified as maybe having some severe problems, they're going to get some different kind of help. It just seems to me that that's just gone. And the money that's getting ready to be spent on that school, I don't know if students are going to feel safer just because $35 million was spent at the school, or any school for that matter. So, yeah. You know, I'm just wondering about your level of safety when you go into school, when you go through the metal detectors. Are you feeling super safe now?
Oh, no.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Also, Ms. Jamala, to feedback on the last question, the last question that you asked Autumn, I feel like a lot with that is just out of sight, out of mind. They don't really care about anything until, especially Gateway, because whenever someone looks at Gateway, they think they belittle us just because we are a predominantly Black school. There's a handful of Black students, and a lot of our students experience harsh things that a lot of us don't even know where to start with asking questions. And then we do get denied by our upper hands that holds higher power than us or than our teachers when we go to them. We're 9 times out of 10 ignored. I feel like they don't really like their job at Gateway. I will say that there are a few trusted adults that we can go to there, but a lot of them just ignore us or push us away, or they get real disrespectful with us. And when someone gets disrespectful with me and I'm trying to open up to you about my feelings, it's something that I don't do that often. So if I'm opening up to you, it's something that I genuinely want to talk about. And for you to push me away or to get disrespectful with me or to yell at me about it, I'm instantly pushed away, or I don't want to be in the presence of you anymore. So I think a lot comes from that as well.
Mm-hmm. So I think the whole thing about, you know, racism in the district, even though it's predominantly Black district and the school board is predominantly Black, that doesn't mean that there's not racist policies in place or that there are attitudes about Black kids that prevails and prevents people from seeing young Black people as human beings that need a human response. And so I'm thinking about your situation, Jay, because you are somebody that embraces a different sexuality. Is that means more challenges for you when people like are looking at you and feeling threatened? What are you feeling?
As far as that, as of right now in my life, I can't say that hasn't been a problem for me yet. I'm not going to say that those problems won't occur, because I'm sure they will. But in at least in my school, in my district, I'm pretty well known. So I'm able to, I have a lot of people that back me up there in my corner. So if I'm into anything, or if I feel any type of disrespect, I'm able to go to somebody who I trust, who is in higher power, who can handle the situation. But as far as safety, as far as my safety, how can I put this?
Do you feel safe?
At times, okay. I do. There are times where I'm like, I'm a little wary. Like, I don't know. I don't really feel like, I just feel like on edge. But most of the time, I do feel safe. I will say, for me personally, I've never been put in a threatening moment. So, a lot of the like trauma that you guys experience, like, I'm not able to like relate to, but I'm able to understand because of the things that have gone around, even the things that have happened in my school and things that have happened like close friends. So that's just from my story. I know a lot of other people have different things. A lot of people don't have, you know, are not able to go to the principal as soon as they want to, you know, or just call up mm-hmm. the superintendent, like, hey, I got this going on. You know, people don't mm-hmm. have that. And what I try to do for my friends, I try to help them make sure that they have those resources, you know, especially for people, because I've had friends who are going through like mental issues, like suicide and things like that. So I try to help them as best as I can, because I don't want it to be a situation to where it's like, dang, I could have helped that person, and now look, they're gonna did this, you know. I just try to always help somebody in some type of way, you know, to show that there is somebody who cares, you know, because right, adults right. also sometimes push kids to the side, you know, won't listen, take it with a grain of salt. So just making sure that somebody knows that you're there as another student, as another peer, I just feel like it's very important.
What role has your parents played in, you know, making sure that the school is providing safety and security? As I mean, you're seniors now, you're going to be getting up out of there soon, but you've gone through a lot in 2 years, and I know Raekwon, who was on that first panel with us, reminded people that, you know, you all have been through COVID, So yeah. that was traumatic for a lot of students to be isolated from friends and now trying to learn on a computer and all of that. So I'm just looking at how this situation has been compounded and still we are not looking at it with a serious lens. So as you all are about to graduate and it's going to come faster than you think, what are your hopes and dreams about the future? For young Black people,
I hope that we, as Black people, get the help that we need. I feel like other resources be there for like other races, and I feel like talking to a counselor or a therapist sometimes it can be weird because as a Black kid, like, can you really relate to me? Like, can you really feel where I'm coming from, or are you just talking?
Are you just doing your job?
Are you just agreeing with me just to agree with me? Mm. Like, I feel like therapy after that situation, I feel like it felt like a task. Like, it wasn't something that me personally was looking forward to. I just feel like it was just information to be given, things people wanted to know, questions that people didn't like get the answers to. And they feel as if since, they was there, they know the answer. I don't feel like it was no type of true connection with the therapy and the counseling that they gave us.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. To speak on my behalf with that, I feel like it should just be more hands-on things that we can count on. And when resources are given to us or are provided for us, they should go over them with us and give us ways to connect to them, because it's different when you're talking at us rather than when you're talking with us, because then we get a better understanding of it. Personally, I know after the shooting, I started to have seizures. I've never ever had that before, so it was just something new to me. I didn't know like how to process a lot of things. I didn't really want to leave the house. The only person I would go with is Jafia and Mackenzie, honestly, just because that was my comfort spot and they knew the situation that I was going through and we could all like relate to it. So,
and help each other. So,
yeah, but that's why I keep going back to peers, because you all are going to talk to each other more than you talk to an adult. And whether or not the kind of training that the peer training and peer education and peer comforting that this should be in the schools now, because you all going to hear things and see things that adults not going to hear. And so it just seems like you all are disarmed when it comes to really being prepared for those kinds of conversations and situations. What about you, Jay? What do you hope? What's your aspirations of what you think people should be doing in these schools?
I hope that there are more conversations about the things that happen in the real world, because these are real things. And I think that what districts and schools try to do is try to push things to the side or try to act like... And I think it's important if you don't talk about it and it's never discussed, no one will ever know, I think there should be more communication when it comes to adults and the children, and not even like the children, like we're high schoolers, we're preteens, we're 12th graders, we're like young adults. Like, I think that the way that they treat us, how can I put this without, some adults don't know how to talk to and interact with children, and I think that is a big thing that should be a part of, if you're going to go into the education field, I think that should be a big thing, just being able to connect with the student. Not saying that every student has to like you, because it's not going to be like that, but being able to talk with the student, even if that student does not like you or have a particularly, like, just being able to talk to that person. You know, there are so many instances where you try to talk to a teacher and they just get all loud and just obnoxious with you for no reason. And you're just trying to have a conversation with them, or you're just trying to understand something.
Right.
And they feel like they feel like you're trying to check them about their job. And it's really not. It's just me trying to understand and me trying to help you understand that I just don't understand. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there should be a big thing when it comes to the adult and children connect.
Back
on what Jay said, I feel like as Black kids, they look at us as one. Mm-hmm. So I feel like in a community of Black people, they are used to a certain stereotype about us. Like, we're bad, we don't listen, we're this, we're that. So I feel like they just look at us as one. Like, they don't give us a chance. Because something that I have realized in the community is that it's common for, like, other races to be the good kids, be the quiet kids, and they get that level of respect. They get that freedom. But us, we have to work hard for it. We have to work towards it, even if we are not the Black kid that's troubled.
Right, right, right. I think that's an interesting analysis and assessment and observation, because I think that when the shooting happened, there were multiple responses. Some people just had a complete, like, you know, emotional breakdown. Some people appeared to be fine. Some people were making jokes out of it. So to your point, Jafia, folks, you know, respond differently to trauma, to fear, to violence. And sometimes it looks a certain way, but it's not that at all. And unless you have a conversation and really probe, you won't know. And I'm thinking about the number of kids that left VAP after the shooting, never to come back, like you, Myasia. If it was me, and if I was a principal, if I was had a role in the district, I would want to know, where did those kids go? And did we not provide the kind of safety that they were looking for as to why they went elsewhere? And so it just seems like there's this disconnect between really understanding where students are, where their mental health is, following a tragedy like this, following a traumatic situation like this. It just seems like, and then you all have said this, just close the book, the shooter's dead, let's just wash our hands and move on. And students are saying, we can't move on. This is still with us. We still need, you know, we need help. We need some counseling. I also remember when students were going to be picked up by their parents at Gateway, they had done a resource list, like, here's where you can go to get this. But I didn't think that was helpful, because one, you were putting the onus on folks to take the step to go there, and then you didn't know who those resources were. Are these good people? Are they going to listen? Are these just people that are going to, you know, take this as a job? So I just I didn't think that was the best way to do that. I just, you know, so there's things that I'm looking at as a former educator that I think could have been done differently. And as somebody who's been working on systemic changes in districts where young people are and how we seem to be responding to them or not. So I want to spend the last few minutes talking about what you all are going to do beyond once you graduated. And I know Raekwon, I was happy that, you know, he went to Morehouse. I don't know what trauma he took with him. But yeah, what do you want to do with your life after high school? You want to start, Jay?
Oh, I guess I can start. After high school, I plan on going to college. Either it'll be here or a different state. More likely a different state. I think St. Louis is just two crabs in a bucket for me. So,
I will be what's going to be your interest? What field of study you're interested in?
Well, I am very interested in psychology and just studying the human mind and just the human psyche in general. I think I really started to get into it during the pandemic, because we have to think, like, a lot of people experienced a lot of things during the pandemic, and that's where a lot of the mental issues come from. Because people were locked in, people weren't able to, if they had other issues, they weren't able to, you know, deal with those because they were locked in a confined space. Some people, they were locked in a confined space where they were like uncomfortable, you know. So I do want to do that. I will be getting a degree pursuing sports medicine as well. So if you're an athlete, I'm going to be taking care of you.
And some of them have mental health issues too. So you can combine those. Yes. What about you, Jafia? What do you want to do after high school? What's your passion? What's your interest?
Right now, I don't want to go to college. Okay. So what I'm going to do is go to trade school for something that I know. I'm going to go to trade school for masonry and carpentry.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep. I have connected with some people who next semester I will be there on campus just going looking around and learning more about my trade and doing more hands-on things.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, that is a area that where you have skilled trades that folks always going to have a job because not a whole lot of people are going into it, particularly Black women. And so it should be lots of opportunities there. What about you, Autumn? What's your plans for post-secondary school?
I want to go to community college. Just a 2-year program to be a cardiovascular ultrasound tech. I want to stay close to home, so therefore I don't want to go out of state. Like, I feel like I need to stay close to home. I have 2 younger siblings, so I feel like need guidance with a lot of stuff. So it's like I would like to stay where I have a closer eye on them. So
okay. Yeah, good for you. Maisha, what's happening for you? I know some of what you're doing, you're already doing it. So what's going on for you? What do you want to do with your life after high school?
So I do have a few plans in mind that I'm already following through with. I am going to attend St. Louis Community College for 2 years to start off social work. Right now in high school, I am taking a psychology class, which kind of jumps me off. But also I'm in law enforcement and next semester we'll be doing internships. So I feel like that is a big help with that too, because at first I wanted to go into criminal justice or just anything with the law enforcement field. But after the shooting, it kind of pushed my strive with social work and wanting to help students of color or just really anyone out there. I'm one of those people that takes on people's emotions. Like if I'm in a room with you and I just see you feeling down, 9 times out of 10, I may know the situation, but I'm gonna ask questions. So yeah, I'm gonna go there to study social work and then take the degree that I graduate there from during those 2 years to UMSU and finish off my social work degree. I plan on getting my master's with that. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you all do have plans, because sometimes when I ask seniors, what do you want to do? I don't know. You better figure it out soon, because something happens after people get out of high school. Folks think they've grown and they don't need any more help. But I'm like, that's when they really need some guidance and direction, because this is a mean, cruel, cold world out there. And so, yeah. So if you don't really have a pathway to where you're going and you need some help with figuring that out, you want to be able to do that with a trusted adult. So, yeah, sounds like you all got it together. And I really appreciate you taking time out today. Jafia Mosley, Autumn Manuel, Jay Porter, Maisha Merriweather, thank you for sharing today. And I don't want this to be the last time that we come together, because I would love towards the end of this year to come back to you all to see how things are going in your schools with you personally. And hopefully we can have a shooting-free school year, but I know things will come up for you at the anniversary, as it usually does. And so all of y'all seem to be very articulate about and caring about your peers' feelings and reaching out. So I think that's going to be a good time for you to exercise those skills and compassion that you have, that you'll be talking with your friends about what's happening and making sure that everybody's okay. So thank you again, and I will be in touch with y'all.
This thank is Jamala
Rogers. Yeah, yes, yes. This is Jamala Rogers, your host, and I will see you on the battlefield. Right now. Right now.